there is no innate help for the embryo to solve the nutrition problem, or for the child to solve the language problem. It's true that this is not right. I mean,
I agree.
I
didn't say that.
But
that's just my point. My point is that Quine, though he's an anti-innatist, he attributes innate structure to the organism. He just does it arbitrarily. What he attributes is the radical translation paradigm.
I was going to say that the debate, it's easy to understand, the debate is about whether or not this innate helping to learn language is big enough to be called a grammar. This is
Not sure, that's easy to understand. Yeah, for example, here's something that could be understood. It's not Quine's position. But somebody could say, this was Hilary Putnam's position, there are generalized learning mechanisms. So Hilary Putnam was one of the early anti-innatists, and his position was there are generalized learning mechanisms which apply to all cognitive domains. They apply to language, to thinking, you know, to everything. And that's all. There's nothing special for language. Putnam is an example. Most psychologists have believed that. For example, Piaget believed that. Skinner certainly believed it. Whether Quine believed it is not so obvious, because he attributes specific structure to the language system, namely the radical translation paradigm, which doesn't look as if it's going to carry over to anything else. But if it does carry it over to other things, then he believes it too. So that's certainly a position that we can understand, but instantly reject. I mean, it's as if somebody could instantly, not even for look at it for a moment. It makes exactly as much sense as if somebody said to the embryologist, you don't have to look at the instructions in the cell, because there's a generalized growth pattern. There are generalized growth mechanisms, and they work for chickens, and they work for nematodes, and they work for people. So forget all your business about the genetic instructions in the cell. Makes exactly as much sense as that. They would make, a scientist wouldn't bother listening to the second one. And they would only listen to this one if somebody tells them what the generalized learning mechanisms are. So, okay, tell me what they are, you know? Tell me what they are, and then I'll take a look. But then all of these people say, well, I can't tell you what they are. I just think they're there. At which point you say, well, I'm sorry, I'm going home. It's just pure irrationality. Now, it's very striking that, and incidentally, in the case of language, we have plenty of evidence that it's false. I mean, language has all kinds of properties that you don't find in other cognitive domains. I mean, you know, it's just radically different from other cognitive domains in all kinds of respects. I mean, even its digital character, you know, or its recursive enumerability, I mean, and on to much more complex properties. And we also have very strong evidence that these properties are universal, that they're just internal, which is why they show up in all languages. But somehow we're told we're not allowed to look at that. We must assume that there are generalized learning mechanisms, although I can't tell you what they are. Now, that's pretty irrational. When the position was stated by Nelson Goodman, who's another major philosopher, in fact, my own teacher, he pointed out something that, in fact, is plausible. He said, look, he doesn't see an alternative to the postulation of innate structure for language, but the fact that you can't find an alternative to a completely offensive and unacceptable view doesn't mean you have to accept that offensive and unacceptable view. Well, that's true enough. I mean, if the view that cognition is like everything else in the biological world is so offensive that you just can't accept it, okay, then don't accept it. I mean, it's like some 18th century physicist saying, I'm just not going to accept universal gravitation, it's too offensive. Well, okay. I mean, that ends the discussion. The discussion with Hilary Putnam, who I should say is an old personal friend of mine since high school, so we've argued about it personally as well as in print. That discussion rests with my question, what are the generalized learning mechanisms? And I don't see any, he has no answer to that. So that's the end of that discussion. The discussion with Quine can't get off the ground because he simply stipulates mechanisms and says you got to accept those, namely the radical translation ones. And he also insists that we treat the language learner and the linguist as following the same course, which makes no sense at all. And since that's what he insists on, I'm just, all I can say is, well, if that's a game you want to play, okay. It doesn't have anything to do with any effort to understand the world or to solve philosophical problems. It's a game, which is going nowhere. And the same would then be true of Donald Davidson and Richard Rorty and, in fact, anybody who takes that paradigm seriously, which is a very wide swathe. Yeah.
I have another question. I didn't quite get your reasons why the first of these three things
is dualism. Well, the thesis is that we're worried about there's a gap between the mental and the physiological, the neurophysiological. It's true that we can't relate them. Okay, we've got a theory of the mental, like some computational representational theory of the brain. We have a theory of the neurophysiological, like you go over to the brain science department and they'll tell you in great detail how synaptic connections work and, you know, sodium ions move from here to there and all that kind of business. And we don't see any way of relating these two things. Okay, so that's the gap. Well, the slogan says the mental, that is what all of this stuff is talking about, is just the neurophysiological at a higher level. That is the neurophysiological, the business about synaptic connections. That's the answer. The mental is just some way of talking about that. Now, the reason why I think that's irrational is that these theories actually work. These theories don't in the relevant domain. I mean, these theories work fine for synaptic connections, but they tell you absolutely nothing about language. Zero. Okay. So that's the domain we're talking about. We're talking about the domain of language. So here we have a theory which tells you nothing about that domain. Here we have theories which tell you a lot about that domain. Now, we're instructed that we must consider these theories to be just abstract versions of these theories. Now, the rational approach would be to say, maybe instead of defining the mental, these are definitions, instead of defining the mental as some abstract version of the neurophysiological, what we could say is maybe the neurophysiological will turn out to be the relevant cellular structures for the eye language, computational representational systems. So maybe in that sense, the neurophysiological will turn out to be the mental at a lower level, but it's the mental we're secure about, not the neurophysiological. And maybe it won't, because there's no special reason to think that, say, synaptic connections are the relevant phenomenon. So it's dualistic in the sense that it's giving a priority to what people intuitively regard as physical, although I don't give any meaning to that, that it shouldn't have.
Most of the people who think that the mental, say that mentally is the neurophysiological at a higher level, and by guess what you say.
No, they don't. Not in the least. They are not, none of them are saying maybe the neurophysiological will turn out to be the right level. In fact, take Searle, whom I'm quoting. This is part of Searle's discussion in which he says you've got to throw these theories out totally, because you're not allowed to attribute rule following to people because of lack of access to consciousness. I talked about that this morning. This happens to be Searle's slogan. I'm quoting him. And it's part of a discussion in which he says, forget the computational representational theories of the brain because you're not allowed to have them. And the reason you're not allowed to have them is some other stipulation about access to consciousness. So he certainly doesn't understand it that way. Insofar as the Churchlands don't exactly say this. They say just forget the mental. Pardon? No, Ned Block, I'll talk about Ned Block tomorrow, and he certainly doesn't say this. Ned Block takes the position, I'll quote it tomorrow, that the computational model of the mind abstracts away from biological realization in principle. So it's not that the mental is neurophysiological at a higher level. The mental is not related to the neurophysiological in principle. That's why he wants to say, that's what he calls, you know, he calls what he calls chauvinism in his account, is the belief that we must restrict our theories to humans. And he says, no, our theories of language ought to as well include, you know, Martians with silicon-based brains. Okay? So it's certainly not the mental, the neurophysiological at a higher level. As to Jerry Fodor, I'm not quite sure what position he takes on this. I don't think he said. Actually, I'm not even sure he'd say that. I'm not sure that Jerry Fodor would say that. Ned Block would deny it. John Searle says it, but means by it throw away the computational theories. And in fact, Ned Block and John Searle are at opposite ends of the discussion over this. It's the issue of strong AI, you know, do algorithms understand?